This is episode 66 of Extraordinary Women Radio. Welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio. I am your host, Cami Gilner. Women are being called to lead with voice, vitality, and vigor. Each week, join me for wisdom-filled interviews with extraordinary women living out loud and making a difference in our world. Their stories will uplift, inspire, and spark your own purpose-driven journey. Hello, my extraordinary women friends. I'm so excited today. Tickets just went on sale this week for my fourth annual Extraordinary Women Ignite Conference, which will be held in Golden, Colorado, November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. Ignite is for the change makers of the world who want to raise up their voice, their visibility, and their business in 2019. I host this event each year in November so that the women attending step into their new year with intention and fire in their belly for all that's possible in their business. And more importantly, a plan to make it happen. It's about vision, it's about voice, and it's about wild success. There are several things that I'm super stoked about for this year's Ignite. First, I've expanded it from a two-day event to a three-day event this year to make space for some very special guest speakers. I get to interview so many amazing women here on Extraordinary Women Radio, and I've hand-selected a few of those whose messages really fit beautiful into my own teachings. The first one is Heidi Ganahl. She's the founder of The She Factor and Camp Bow Wow. She built a multi-million dollar franchise business, and her stories of resiliency are powerful and motivational, and I'm honored she'll be joining us. The second is Dr. Anita Sanchez, and she is the author of The Four Sacred Gifts, Indigenous Wisdom for Modern Times. Anita has met with Indigenous elders from all around the world and every continent, and she's going to share the lessons she has learned around our interconnectedness to people, to the earth, and to animals, and how we are all one relation. Her talk is going to be amazing and magical, and I'm thrilled she's going to be joining us. The third is Mia Voss, and she is the ultimate traveler and a global brand ambassador working on brands such as Lexus, Toyota, Mitsubishi, and Mazda, and more. She is an amazing people connector who will share her branding wisdom on building communities and connection, something that is so important in our world today. My super early bird 10-day tickets just went on sale this week, and you can attend for only $149 if you sign up by August 26. Jump out to my website and grab one of these limited tickets at this pre-launch price, and you can attend all 3 days for only $149. It's all about raising up your business in 2019. I hope you will join us. Ignite creates a real sisterhood of impact. And here's the deal, my extraordinary women friends. The world needs us now. So come join us and let's raise up your voice and visibility. And together we can raise up our impact around the world. And speaking of raising up, I'm super excited about today's guest, Dori Clark, the author of Entrepreneurial You, Reinventing You, and Stand Out, which was named the number one leadership book of 2015 by Inc. magazine. Dori is all about raising up your business, and she shares so much rich wisdom in today's Extraordinary Women Radio interview. Dori is a frequent contributor to the Harvard Business Review. She consults and speaks for clients including Google, Microsoft, and the World Bank. I am thrilled to have her join us here today. Let's meet Dori Clark. Well, welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio, Dori.
Thank you so much, Cami. Great to be speaking with you.
Yes, I'm so thankful for our mutual friend, Brian Kramer, for introducing us.
Oh, me too. He is wonderful. I've known Brian for a few years. We actually met, probably 5 years ago when we were both on a webinar that IBM sponsored. And it was kind of this thought leader chit chat about some trends in marketing kind of thing. And he was just saying so many smart things. I thought I gotta be friends with this guy.
Yes, he's quite smart, that's for sure. I'm part of his H2H, the human to human marketing group that he and his wife Courtney do, and it's just fantastic. It's just such they're good people and they attract good people.
Oh, love it.
Yeah. So I've been reading your book, Entrepreneurial You, and I love your book. And where I came about across you was I heard your podcast interview with Allie Brown on Glambition Radio and really caught myself just saying yes, yes, yes to everything that you were talking about. And there's just so much that you bring in the wisdom of entrepreneurial land, I think, that entrepreneurs really need to hear. So I'm thrilled to have you here. And to start with, the New York Times really described you as an expert at self-reinvention and helping others make changes in their life. What has your journey through your own reinventions taught you about reinvention?
Well, probably the most important thing that I've learned about reinvention over the course of my own career trajectory is the importance of setting your own narrative. Because the truth is, for a lot of us, we are so in the weeds. We're so tied up with just our own processes. We kind of assume, I mean, not really in an egotistical way, but just because we're not thinking about it, that other people are following the progress and the trajectory as closely as we are. And the truth is they absolutely are not. They have this kind of dim, fuzzy awareness of who we are and what we do. And so they're not following the minutiae. And so if you've been making changes or if you've been plotting to do something different, or maybe even for a while you've been gaining new skills because you're looking to, you know, make a shift, most people probably are not really aware of that. And so it is our job, not theirs, to make them aware of it and be thoughtful about how we are conveying our narrative and what our goals and what our ambitions and what our abilities really are.
Can you share a personal story of your own where that came about for you, where you were like, oh, you were so caught into it. You know, and I totally get it. So we get caught into our own stories and what's happening, and everybody else is caught in their own stories as well. So is there a time and place where you really realize that, not everyone notices this?
Well, a big one for me was that, you know, people were trying to be really nice. I mean, what I actually saw was that they were trying to help me. But early in my career, you know, I started out as a journalist, and then I went into politics. And so I had been self-employed for a while, you know, working full-time, having my own business. And I, in the early days of my business, kept getting these pings from people about job offers that, you know, typically to be a spokesperson for political candidates. And these were fairly prestigious engagements. You know, these were things that, you know, 5 years before I would have loved, I would have thought that it would have been really cool to do, but I was really committed to entrepreneurship and running my own business. And I think that for a lot of these folks, they either didn't know that I had gone into business for myself, or maybe they thought I was a consultant with air quotes, like maybe that's like a cover for, oh, I'm right, looking for a job. So they just were not on the same page, and I appreciated them thinking of me, but the net effect was that their understanding of me and what kinds of things and opportunities would be suitable for me was basically like 5 years out of date. And
yeah, it was best kept secret of what you were doing, right?
Yeah, I realized, oh, if they're thinking of me for these things, they're not thinking of me for the things I actually want.
Right, right. That's such, and to get that, find that clarity around what it is that you want, and so that you're telling that story, and you're leading, your voice is leading with that.
Yes, exactly.
Huh. Very good. Very good. So what inspired you to write Entrepreneurial You?
Well, I decided to write Entrepreneurial You because the previous book that I had done, Stand Out, which came out in 2015, I had been traveling around a lot, speaking about it. That is a book about how to basically become a thought leader in your field, how to become a recognized expert. And what I came to realize is that while I did think, and I do think, that is essential in today's modern economy, you know, we have to, if we're going to be fighting back against being a commodity in whatever business we're in, we need to have a strong brand. What I came to realize was that's necessary, but it's not necessarily sufficient,
right?
Because a lot of people today can build a pretty good brand and can even look very successful on the surface, but they are not necessarily running great businesses because they have not learned how to monetize and how to actually turn that that high regard and repute into money. And your business can't really exist for long. It can't be very successful or sustainable if that's the case. So I wanted to write Entrepreneurial You basically to learn how to make more money for myself and to show other people how to build a successful and lucrative business.
And so you went out and you spoke to, was it 50?
Yeah, about 50.
50 entrepreneurs to hear what they were doing right.
Exactly, exactly. I come from a journalism background, and so my impulse is, if you want to solve a problem, ask a lot of smart people and then compile the results and put them together and create a structure that other people can learn from.
And what did you learn through those conversations?
Well, the main thing that I learned is that in many ways it should be thought of as a smorgasbord, because there's not one way to have a successful business. There's not one way to do things right. People are succeeding in a lot of different ways, which is actually pretty liberating. But the key is that for almost all of them, for almost all of the people that are really successful, they have multiple income streams. So the combination might be different, but they are doing more than one thing. And if you can master that skill, it both gives you resiliency in the case of a problem or a downturn, but also gives you a lot more upside.
Absolutely. And that was one of the things that really jumped out at me when I was listening to your interview on Glambition Radio, that, you know, the multiple stream theory and, you know, having, you know, different revenue streams coming into you. And it's almost counterintuitive to what a lot of the business coaches will teach today, where they're teaching, you know, find one thing, focus on it, and go do that one thing. But I think perhaps early on in a business, it's really important and very true. But the deeper entrepreneurs get into their business, having a more diverse mix of offerings is really powerful.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, certainly it is true that you don't want to stretch yourself too thin. You don't want to be a dilettante. You don't want to, you know, keep flitting around and never actually deliver on your main promise. But it is, at the other end of the spectrum, it is undoubtedly leaving money on the table if you just do one thing, and whenever your eager audience says to you, oh, well, do you do this or do you do that? And you say, no, I just do this one thing.
Right. And I think that the other piece, and I wonder if this came out throughout your interviews, is to really be able to build a business that's aligned to who you are, what you're passionate about, what you have, you know, what you value, and do that in a way that you're building a business aligned to you versus following the, you know, 9 billion different ways that you can grow a business. How are they all finding their own truth? And this is the way I should be growing my business. These are the pathways that work best for me.
Yeah, so I think it's very much a combination. You know, it's like the Venn diagram of what do you like to do, what are you personally called to do, and what does your audience want, or where do they congregate? Mm-hmm. So, for instance, you know, you might have somebody that just really hates video. And exactly. If that's the case, you know what? Good news. You don't have to do video.
Right.
I think sometimes people feel like the answer is very prescriptive, and that no, if you want to succeed, everyone has to do video. And it's not true. What is the case is that everyone has to somehow share their ideas so mm-hmm. that people know what you're about and they can say, oh, you know, I really like her stuff. But it doesn't have to be video if you don't like that. You can, you know, you can be an audio person. You might want to do blogs. You might want to be a speaker, whatever it is. So I think you do have the ability to sort of sift around and find your spot.
Right. And how did writing Entrepreneurial You impact your business?
Well, in a big way, Entrepreneurial You made a difference for me. Part of the reason was that I very explicitly used it as a test vehicle for myself. I had questions and things that I wanted to explore about creating new income streams. Specifically, I was very keen at the time to learn about how to create online courses. That was mm-hmm. something that I'd been interested in for a while. But I also knew from observing other people and kind of watching the process closely that it was definitely an area where I'd seen a lot of people falter. You know, they spend mm-hmm. a lot of money creating a course, and then a lot of times they just wouldn't be able to recoup it because they weren't able to sell enough copies. And I thought, all right, I don't want that to be me. I want to be smarter about that. So I wanted to proceed carefully. And again, because of my training as a journalist, I thought, well, you know, I should ask people who have actually done it well, who've been, you know, successful. And so one of my missions in writing Entrepreneurial You in particular was to learn more about creating online courses. Mm-hmm. So that was a facet of the interviews that I conducted for the book. And once I felt like I had asked a lot of good questions from smart people like my friend Danny Eney, my friend Jason Van Orden, both of whom are featured in Entrepreneurial You, I decided that I would run a pilot. And, you know, I'm a big fan of pilot testing. It definitely limits your risk and limits your downside. And so I decided I would do this short-term pilot with 40 people and ran it over maybe a six-week period. And, you know, the good news is that, all right, if you're doing a little test like that, it's not going to kill you. It's not going to break you,
right,
if it doesn't do that well. But fortunately, in my case, people actually did like the idea very much. And so we were able to turn it into a robust offering, which became my recognized expert flagship course. So that's been a great process. And through the techniques that I learned in writing Entrepreneurial You and then just putting them into practice, I was actually able, over the course of that year that I was trying it out, over the course of 2016, I was able to increase my income by nearly $200,000. It was it was an extra $193,700 that I added to my bottom line as compared to the year before, literally just from the techniques that I had researched and learned about in writing the book.
So what were some, and I'll be completely honest here. So this is really fun for me today, because today I actually launched my first online course.
So exciting.
I know, right? And so I'm in this space of really thinking it through and building out all the different pieces to it. And so it's a very exciting place for me to be in. And I realized I had so much content that was sitting on my hard drive that I share with my one-on-one clients and with my mastermind groups. It was like, there's some real value to this. And so, you know, I'm in that space of launching online courses right now. And when you think about what you learned in that year, so, I mean, so here's me as the newbie online course person. What advice would you give me around that?
Well, there's a few things. So the first couple, I guess, relate to things that you almost do before the course. So in your case, Cammie, I know you got this right, but for your listeners who are in an even more nascent stage with this, I would say, first of all, it is really important to test the concept of it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people just kind of come up with an idea in their head and say, everyone's going to love that.
Right.
And then they create the course and, you know, surprise, not everyone might love it. So that's why running a pilot or at, you know, and a pilot can take a lot of different forms. It doesn't necessarily have to literally be
sure.
a mirror of the online course, but it should be like maybe a workshop or, you know, a teleseminar series, you know, a series of webinars, whatever it is. But you want to test out the concept, first of all, to make sure you have enough to say about it, but second of all, to make sure that your positioning is correct and that your audience actually values the thing that you're talking about. I mean, it could be that you're mostly right, that yes, they are interested in this topic, but if you're positioning it in a slightly off way, then it's not going to sell. And it's far better to learn that early on before you've invested a lot in it. Right. So testing is a huge thing.
Awesome. Awesome. And really being able to understand who you want to be bringing into that and what they're trying to solve, what issues and problems they're trying to solve and what they're really aspiring to create.
Yes, exactly. That's right. Mm-hmm. And the other piece that I would say, you know, I, in addition to coming out of a background as a journalist, I was also a nonprofit executive director for a couple of years, and it was this tiny, tiny nonprofit. And I think that in many ways that probably deeply shaped my approach to this, but it got me used to being a really DIY person. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to solve problems on my own. I like to
me too.
Learn how to do it on my own. Yeah, amen. I know people who have spent literally, they paid companies, you know, $20,000-$30,000 to create a course for them. And the, you know, the course looks beautiful because they've, you know, they did a 3-camera shoot and they made it, you know, super fancy and super nice. But, you know, you don't want to give your course the Tony Robbins treatment if you don't have a Tony Robbins mailing list.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
You know, it's fine to spend lots of money building a course if you know that it's going to bring in millions of dollars and you have this huge following. But look, I mean, you're presumably doing this to be profitable. And what people are interested in is high quality information,
right?
And depending on the nature of the course, possibly a robust community. They are not, you know, they will disqualify you if your course looks like crap. You know, if it's right. Like if it's like you're trying to sell them the Blair Witch Project, then understandably they're not going to be happy. But if you can make it good enough and you make the content great, then that is so much better. You can, and I can, you know, I mean, I have, for my course, filmed it literally all myself. I filmed it, about half of it with a friend who was nice enough to, let me set up and do it in her nice, handsome living room. And she filmed it for me. The rest, I actually just filmed myself with, you know, like a tripod and an iPhone and everything, which is very high quality cameras, and it looks fine. You know, yes. It's definitely good enough for this. And so my overall costs were for the recording, I mean, essentially just a few hundred dollars for the equipment that I bought, as opposed to the $30,000 that it could have been. So if it's going to be profitable, you have to just make sure that you're making smart choices up front as well.
I love it. I love it. And it makes me happy that that's the way you did yours as well, because I recently got my SLR camera all hooked up onto the tripod with the right lighting and with some sound components to it. And, you know, I'm excited to be doing it in this way and, you know, pulling content that I have had, that I've been teaching, that I've been leveraging and just taking it into another format. So that's really encouraging to me. So thank you for that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So you've stated that in this uneasy economic environment, mastering these diverse sources of sustainable income is just an essential art in any field. And you talk about monetizing the entrepreneurial business. You openly shared that being visible in your voice, speaking on big stages and writing in the biggest publications doesn't always equate to a profitable business. And we've touched on this already, but what is it that, you know, that you make that big shift into really building profit for your business versus just being on the stage and being, you know, that big shining star, but you know, what's the difference there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that one of the quotes in the book that I think kind of summarizes this in a lot of ways is from an interview that I did a while ago with a guy named Doc Searls, who's a kind of well-known internet theorist. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about the difference between making money from something and making money because of something. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of a critical piece of information here that I think is useful. If in the old days, you could say, people could kind of get away with just making money from something. So mm-hmm. meaning you are a journalist, so you get paid for writing articles. Pretty simple,
right.
You know, and everybody understands that. But in the modern economy, especially because there's been disruption and because, frankly, the price point for a lot of things like journalism has gone down. I mean, if you're a freelance writer, you know, unless you are part of the elite, you are probably making less money than you did 10 or 20 years ago because there's just been so much more competition and devaluation of the enterprise. If you were continuing to rely on making money from your articles, you would be in a pretty sad state of affairs. Mm-hmm. But the trick is to kind of have this like 2.0 thinking where you say, all right, if you know, you can make a certain amount of money from something, but you can make even more money because of it. And so this is like the back end, essentially. And it involves thinking, well, what other activities could I do? What activity does this make possible? So if I will use my example. I used to be a journalist. I used to get paid for that journalism. That no longer was an option for me. I got turned down, you know, I got laid off. And so I had to come up with something else. And so these days I actually do very journalistic activities. I spend a lot of time blogging and writing. I get no money for that. You know, when I write mm-hmm. for Harvard Business Review, I get zero.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, what that makes possible is having a speaking career where I'm able to get $20,000 for a talk, which is, you know, practically as much money as I made in a year as a journalist. and you know, you're able to get exposure for consulting engagements, coaching engagements, people join your email list and maybe they would sign up for, you know, for a course or something like that. So there's a lot of possibilities.
So you're taking that art of what you do really well, but doing it for other reasons. It's to really step up what you're doing.
Exactly. Yes.
Nice. Nice. So you argue that the concepts in entrepreneurial you are just as important for people who have day jobs. Why is that?
Yeah. So the reason that I think that it is so critical for people who even have day jobs, it kind of goes back to my situation that I faced and of course got seared into my consciousness when I was a journalist, which is that, you know, when you have a day job, you have one income stream.
Mm-hmm.
That is your job.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, it's great while you have it, but there is very much, I mean, we have all seen in recent years, there's kind of the illusion of false security.
Oh, certainly.
We think, oh, it's just going fine. Of course, I get X amount per week or X per amount per month. And you assume it's going to go on forever. And then when it doesn't, there's no warning. There's no warning.
I've been there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes people, you know, they, for a while, oh, you know, the company's in trouble or whatever. But when I get laid off, I mean, nowadays it's very commonplace for journalists to lose their jobs. But I got laid off in 2001. It was like a new thing. It was like, what? Oh, my God, this is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they called you into the office and you're supposed to leave within like a half an hour. And it's just like, oh my God, I was working on a story. I thought that I was going to do X, Y, and Z tomorrow. And it's like, nope, you're out of a job. And so right. it was just so sudden.
It shakes you to the core, right?
That's exactly right.
When I got laid off in 2008, and I always tell the story of walking out that day after that half hour of time to clean out your office, right? Without a computer, without a phone, and without a title. So it was like everything had been stripped away at that moment. And it's so raw.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, I think that if you are an employee with a day job, if you have an extra income stream, that gives you so much more freedom. It gives you so much power because even if you never need to use it, even if you love your job, you want to do it forever, it means you have options. And sometimes it actually can be something that really is like a life vest for you.
Right.
One of the stories that I tell in Entrepreneurial You is about a guy named Pat Flynn, who mm-hmm. has kind of reinvented himself into being a well-known podcaster and blogger. But at the time, around the time that you got laid off in 2008, he worked at an architecture firm. And with the recession, it was just, you know, kind of a bloodbath, and he got laid off along with a lot of other people, and no other architecture firms were hiring. So the prospects were very bleak. But around that same time, he had started self-publishing this ebook that he was selling for like $30 on his website. I mean, it was nothing fancy, but he had this ebook that he was selling, and it turned out that it became so successful that within a couple of months, he was actually making more money from the ebook than he was making at his architecture job. And that became the thing that kept him afloat during the recession.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's totally awesome. And it's those small ideas that can turn into something, you know, really grand, right? It's how can I serve with something that I have and bring out to the world? How do you work in your creative processes to come up with new ideas and thoughts for yourself?
So, you know, the way that I come up with new ideas is sometimes, like for, you know, book project or something like that, it's because there's sort of a big theme that I'm grappling with in my own life. I mean, in writing Stand Out, it was, well, I'd like to become known as a thought leader in my field, how do I do it? Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you know, I'll just write a book, and that'll give me a really good excuse to interview everybody that I admire.
And I love this because it's not like you're waiting. It's like, wait a minute, I can't write a book about this because I'm not the expert on this. It's like, no, I want to write a book about this, and I'm going to go talk to all the experts about it, which in turn makes you the expert in it.
That's right. That's right. You're going to hack the system.
It's brilliant.
And then, thank you. And then for Entrepreneurial You, similarly, it was, well, I'd like more income streams. I would like more revenue. How can I figure that out? For more micro type things, I actually often get asked questions. A lot of times people will email me and they'll ask a question, and I will capture my response when I write back to them. And, you know, sometimes it's advice about, oh, I'm thinking about, should I self-publish or should I commercially publish? Or they'll ask a question about, oh, you know, I'm having this issue with my employee. What should I do? And, you know, I'll just shoot off a response to try to be helpful, but I'll capture it and I'll archive it, and I'll use that as the germ for a future.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's
totally awesome, because that way you're something that you're already having conversations about, but you're taking it that one step further to save it so that you can come back to it and create off of that.
Yes, exactly. And for, you know, somebody's at the nascent stages in their career and they don't have people like emailing them questions, a really good place to kind of accomplish a similar thing is to go to the website Quora, Q-U-O-R-A, and people ask tons of questions there, and you can use that as a jumping off point for an idea for an article or a blog post.
Awesome. 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 So there's, you know, we've been talking about how those of us who took the leap out of the corporate world, went into the entrepreneurial space, started our own business. And it's such a rewarding space to be in, to do our own things, right? I mean, it's such a blessing to be able to do that. But I see a lot of people, and I know you do too, where people get, they're trying and they're trying to make things happen, but it doesn't work, right? And so they abandon that hope and that dream that they've set up for themselves because they've gotten discouraged and they just give up. How would you advise our women listeners to guard against that?
Yeah, so if people are feeling discouraged, I think that one of the most important things to understand, I mean, we always, this is just the human condition, we always want things to happen faster than
right.
they do. And I think that the more that we can remind ourselves and sort of steel ourselves with stories from other people's experiences, we can kind of use that as a talisman to help us get through. So, I mean, something, for instance, that I like to talk about and tell the students in my Recognized Expert program is the basically about writing, right? Because in some ways, you might assume that once you start getting to write for a high profile publication like a Harvard Business Review or a Forbes or something like that, that like that's the hard part. And then once you write for them, that you're going to get tons of clients off of it. And that, in a broad sense, maybe is true, but it's certainly not true in an immediate sense. It requires a huge amount of repetition for that right. to happen. It is so rare that anyone would ever see one blog post and then be like, oh, that was a great blog post. Let me immediately hire someone for a $50,000 contract. I mean, it could
happen.
It's
got to be the resiliency, right? You've got to be in it for the long game.
You do. And so for me, what I've seen in my experience is that it took me about 2 to 3 years of writing very regularly, by which I mean five times to 12 times a month for these publications to actually start seeing a sustained and significant volume of inbound inquiries. Mm-hmm. Now, there were plenty of benefits before then, in the sense that you can start citing them in your bio, you can use it as a good way of networking because you can start interviewing people for those publications. You have the extra credibility that if a client is already considering you, you can share pieces that you've written for that venture. But in terms of the holy grail, which is the unsolicited message in your inbox saying, hey, will you keynote this conference or whatever, that took a good 2 to 3 years to actually start happening.
Yes, yes. And so I think what I'm hearing there is really be consistent in what you're putting out into the world for people to hear from you, and keep at it.
Yes, for sure.
Awesome, awesome. So Dory, where can people learn more about you and your work and your books?
Yeah, thank you, Cammie. I appreciate it. The place that I would definitely send them first is to my website, which is doryclark.com. It's DoreClark. And there are more than 400 free articles that I've written there for places like Forbes and the Harvard Business Review, Entrepreneur, that they can check out and read for free. And especially for folks who are interested in multiple income streams, I do have a free resource that they might enjoy, which is the 88 question on entrepreneurial use self-assessment, which asks these questions and provides prompts to help people think about how to create multiple income streams in their own business.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, thank you so much. I've gotten great feedback about it. I think people have found it pretty interesting, and folks can get it for free at doryclark.com/entrepreneur.
Okay, awesome. I'm sure we'll get some people going out there to download that. So, and then the final question I always ask is, what three pearls of wisdom can you leave with our audience today?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my Recognized Expert course, one of the pillars that I teach about is the three ingredients that are necessary to become a recognized expert, which is content creation, social proof, and network. And so to that end, I'll actually give a tip about each of them that might be helpful to your listeners. So when it comes to content creation, the basic idea here, it's pretty logical once you say it, but if you want to be sought out, people need to know what you think. They need to know what your ideas are. So that's kind of a basic thing. And yet a lot of people don't do content creation, and then they wonder why they're not getting called to be a keynote speaker, for instance.
Or they may only do it, to a point where they're just repeating other things they're hearing versus really finding their own opinion.
Yeah, exactly. And so what I would say for that as a tip, just to underline it, is that if you are trying to figure out what to write about, or you're looking for kind of a discipline, something that I actually advise my students to do is to go to Quora, the question and answer website, and just give yourself, try to cultivate a habit of answering one question per day on Quora. That will give you practice into what's on people's minds, because these are real questions that people have asked. It'll enable you to hone your writing skills, and you can turn those answers that you have written into a seed that you can then expand into a full-fledged blog post.
That's awesome.
So that's the content creation one. That would be tip number one. Number two, for social proof, basically, this is a term that is used in psychology. Robert Cialdini, the great author of Influence, the Psychology of Persuasion, talks about it a lot. And essentially, it just means, you know, your credibility. What is it about you that you have cultivated so that people know that you should be taken seriously?
Mm-hmm.
And a great way to do this that is available to anyone is to get involved in a leadership role in a professional association. And the reason that I say this is, you know, it may be, you know, it may be hard to get a job at a blue chip company. It may be too late to go to an Ivy League college because you've already, you know, got somewhere else or, you know, whatever. But anybody can take on a leadership role in a professional association. And the truth is, almost always, these positions are not hard to get. People, let's be honest, they're busy. They are not fighting for a free volunteer position that takes time. But if you do it, there is huge credibility attached to being the president of the, you know, the New England chapter of the blah, blah, blah association, you know, mm-hmm. whatever it is. Right. And it gives you a kind of standing and authority that really causes people to sit up and take notice. So it's a real pathway to credibility. So that would be tip number two.
Would you, I think one of the ways I often approach that is through nonprofit boards. Do you put that in the same kind of a category?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a wonderful way to do it as well. I certainly, in my book, Reinventing You, I actually have a whole chapter encouraging people to get involved in charity boards, not just because it's a nice thing to do, although it is, but also because it can be a great form of both networking and professional credibility.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. So number three.
Yes. So number three is talking about your network. And this is really essential because, you know, you might have great content, you might be very credible, but if you don't know anyone and no one knows you, then it's going to be pretty hard for the word to spread. So you need to get strategic about this. And for me, this was certainly something that I faced when I started my business in 2006. I had been a journalist and I'd worked in politics and I had run a nonprofit. And that meant that I knew a lot of people in those industries,
right.
But they're not the industries that are going to hire you. They're right. not the industries that have any money. And so I needed to really change and kind of, you know, I say upgrade, not in like a you know, sort of a values sense, but I needed to upgrade my network in terms of my ability to meet the kind of people that were now salient to me as right. Someone looking for business clients. And so I think that, there's a couple things that you can do. One is just to get really focused about that and understanding that networking is not going to happen by accident. You have to be very deliberate about meeting people. And first, I would not go to these kind of broad cattle call networking events. If you see something like in the paper that's advertised as a networking event, almost always that is not going to be useful.
No,
to you. That's not right. where the useful people go because right. they're too busy.
Right.
So the corollary to that number two is that if you actually get something that really is a good networking opportunity, whether it's the opportunity to join a conference, a high-end conference, or a program, or mastermind, or something like that, where you feel confident that, you know, you respect the person or the institution that's running it, then you should invest in that because you need to surround yourself with the right people.
Absolutely. I so agree with that. I actually run a series of events called Extraordinary Women Connect, and I don't even call it networking because I don't want it. It's not about a networking, you know, speed dial networking kind of thing, right? It's much more of a deep connection to make meaningful relationships so that you can go help one another at some point in some space and, you know, bringing the right people to the room. So it's so important to find the right venues and the right places to meet the people that you want to be connected with.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, those are awesome. Well, I so appreciate everything today, Dory. You've brought such great wisdom to us. And I know my listeners are going to really enjoy hearing this and learning from you. And I bet they're going to all be out there thinking, you know, what's the source of income that I need to be building into my business? And they'll be downloading your free resource that you've got.
So, that's great. Thank you so much, Cammie. I appreciate it. It's great talking with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. You have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
I hope you liked this episode of Extraordinary Women Radio. If you did, please share this podcast with your own special tribe of women and help spread the love, the dreams, and the inspiration. Are you thinking about making the next bold move in your life? I invite you to take the Your Next Bold Move quiz at CammieGellner.com to find out how you can jumpstart a passionate and meaningful next chapter. You may also enjoy my book, Fire Dancer, Your Spiral Journey to a Life of Passion and Purpose, which is available on Amazon. In Fire Dancer, you will become intimately connected to your heart's calling and build the courage and resiliency to ignite your what's next. I'd love to hear from you on any of my social media channels. I'm on both Facebook and Twitter, and the links are available on my website. Till next time, my friend, listen to your heart, follow your dreams, and be you.